In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Dear viewers, brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another program from the series Open Talk. I'm Mahdi Rustan, your host today. As you know, this show is being broadcasted live from the holy city of Qom, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Before anything else, I would like to congratulate you on the 10 days leading up to the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution, the revolution that truly changed the world that we live in today. Today I have with me, we have a number of guests, some here in the studio, and some will join us later on within the discussion via phone from abroad. I also have with me my friend Abbas Monfared, who will help us in carrying out the discussion and will let you know about today's topic.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the merciful, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Open Talk. I'm Abbas Monfared. It's a great privilege to host you in this program. On today's program, we're going to talk about the impact of Iran's revolution in the contemporary history of the Islamic world. Of course, Iran's revolution as the greatest and deepest historical event in the contemporary age has been not only of enormous impact in all aspects of the country as pillars of the country, but also the waves of this revolution passed across all borders and dramatically changed all global equations and arrangements by the superpowers of the world. We'll be back with you after a short break to talk about it more.
For security reasons, the airport has been sealed off to the general public, and Khomeini's first few moments on Iranian soil were subdued. It was the quiet before the storm. Motorcade crowds were the most emotional near the University of Tehran, where scores of pro-Khomeini demonstrators had been wounded or killed by Iranian troops in the past week. It was here that Khomeini's security-conscious aides had to fight their way through a mass of devotion. Each step of the way, Khomeini left behind screaming admirers who tried to run after the entourage or leap aboard the official buses. Others stayed behind and held spontaneous street celebrations.
"Greetings to you, Khomeini," they chanted, surging toward him, desperate to touch the hand or robe of the holy man, or to have something, anything, touched and blessed by him. "To touch him," one man said, "is to touch the person who speaks to God."
A new and more turbulent era for Iran had begun. The reign of Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, the man who ruled Iran through four decades, came to an end.
Welcome back, dear viewers. As my friend Abbas Monfared mentioned, today we're going to talk about the impact that the Islamic Revolution has had within the last couple of years on the contemporary history or the history of the Islamic world throughout this age. Today, inshallah, I have with me a dear guest within the studio, Dr. Shujaipur, who is going to help us in carrying out today's discussion. Dr. Shujaipur is an expert in political history. Later on, however, Dr. Bahmanpour will also join our discussion from London. Dr. Shujaipur, welcome to the program. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for inviting me to this program. Inshallah, we try to have a fruitful and beneficial discussion for our dear viewers all over the world.
Thank you very much. So before we start with the discussion, to ask the first question, we're going to go to my friend Abbas Monfared. He's going to let you know the ways you can contact us or the ways you can get in touch with us in case there are any suggestions, opinions, or comments you would like us to know.
Abbas? Thank you very much, Mahdi. Let me start by a nice statement from the founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini: "This power of Islam, the power of the face of the nation, and the awakening of the nation has arisen under the protection of the glorious Quran and the teaching of Islam. Dear viewers, if you watch our program for the first time, if you like to contact us, you can send your messages or comments. Our webpage is Open Talks TV. We can take your comments and messages on Twitter and Facebook. If you have any questions, you can raise your questions, and our experts are here to provide you with answers. If you like to watch our videos, you can go on YouTube. Our webpage is YouTube Open Talks TV. You can go there, you can watch our videos and give your comments. You can also get in touch with us via phone. Our phone lines are subtitled during the program. You can call us and join us in this program. Of course, the purpose of this program is to open up your minds to new ideas and concepts for better ways of living. Thank you for joining us in this program. Mahdi.
Thank you very much, Brother Abbas. So, Dr. Shajaipur, to start out with the discussion, I guess the first question that comes to mind is the importance or the significance, I would say, of this revolution that took place. If you could just please elaborate on the significance of this revolution and why it's so important, and why is it that we think that it changed things within the world. If you could please elaborate on that.
Yes, that's a very vital question, really, and it has involved the mind of many thinkers, researchers, all over the world, in the Western countries, in Islamic countries, and they are doing a lot of researches about Islamic Revolution and the roots of Islamic Revolution and the impact of Islamic Revolution over the contemporary history of the world. The first question comes to the mind. We see after the victory of Islamic Revolution on 11 February 1979, just right after the Islamic Revolution, we were faced with a great enmity mm-hmm. and hostility by the superpowers and Western countries.
True.
And a lot of propaganda against Islamic Revolution from the start points of the victory of Islamic Revolution. And most of this propaganda and enmity are not based on the reality of Islamic Revolution. So the question here is, what is the philosophy and the reasons for this type of enmity?
What is it that has stirred so much yes. enmity and hostility towards this phenomena that's taking
what
place?
What Islamic Revolution as a phenomena, what has Islamic Revolution has brought to the world that they are so worried,
true.
So frightened about Islamic Revolution? Just we should, if we review the world history, and especially the Islamic world history, at the beginning of the 20th century, we can have a lot of answers that why Islamic Revolution made them so much angry and worry about the future of the Western culture and civilization, capitalism, and so on. So I think as a teacher of history, especially as in my area of studies, Islamic world history,
true.
We can have a lot of keynotes when we look at the Islamic world situation at the beginning of the 20th century. And I think when we have a review, we will find a lot of important reasons that help us to understand the importance of Islamic Revolution.
So I guess what we're going to do is we're going to go through an overview of the situation that Muslims in general had during that time before the Islamic Revolution was even triggered by what it was triggered by. So we're going to go through, I guess, what we're going to do is we're going to go through the situation or the circumstances that Muslims were dealing with back then.
Exactly. Even in the holy city of Rome, when we are faced with a lot of Western professors who come here to study
True.
About Iran and Islamic Revolution, when we have an overview about the world history and Islamic world history in the 20th century and even in the 21st century, most of them, they don't have this background and this information about the happening and events Islamic world.
Sure.
And their mind is filled with the propaganda by the especially Western media about Islamic Revolution and Iran and Islam, especially like some phenomena like Islamophobia and like that.
Sure.
When we come back to the beginning of the 20th century, the great happening which happened after the First World War was the failure of the Ottoman Empire.
True.
After 6 centuries of ruling over
as a superpower.
A superpower for because Ottoman Empire was a really superpower for 6 centuries.
True.
And many times the European states tried to fail it, but they couldn't, and they couldn't defeat the Ottoman Empire.
True.
So it was the greatest Islam, the greatest Islamic system, and as a superpower.
Okay.
So the situation, unfortunately, before the First World War, as the increase of corruption, economic corruption, social and even moral corruption in the Ottoman Empire, it made the Ottoman Empire so much weak.
Yeah.
And so the superpowers in Europe in that time were hopeful to defeat Ottoman Empire after about 6 centuries.
Yeah.
So one of the output, the good output of the West superpowers at that time, like France, like Great Britain, and other countries in Europe, was that the defeat and the failure of the Ottoman Empire, the sunset of Ottoman after 6 centuries.
Sure.
So what happened after that? We see after the great Ottoman Empire was split to small countries. The European part of the Ottoman Empire was back to the Europe.
True.
And it was separated from the Ottoman Empire. And even the Asian part and the Middle East part also was separated. And we see in the most part of Middle East, the puppet governors mm-hmm. who were appointed by the Western superpower of that time, which were European countries, because in that time before the Second World War, we don't say America was a superpower.
Okay, it was more of Europe that was going on.
Yes.
Okay,
and it happened in that time. The Ottoman Empire was split to small countries, mm-hmm. and you know what I studied in the Encyclopedia of Cultures and Countries, which is published in Europe. They themselves say that the rulers of the Middle Eastern countries in that time were the puppet governors.
Mm-hmm.
They themselves confessed that they were puppet governors.
True.
So, what the great Ottoman Empire were changed to? A small country today, we know it as Turkey.
True. So I mean, if we were to move on from the Ottoman Empire and it's falling,
yes,
and it's splitting into all these different countries that we know today, because that sort of gives us a picture of what Muslims were dealing with, in the 20th century or after the First World War.
I'm trying to say to our dear viewers, the relation between the great event of Islamic Revolution and the problems the Islamic world had at the beginning of the 20th century. So that was the situation for the Ottoman Empire. And some new countries like Jordan, Syria, and were formed in the Middle East. And all of these countries were under the supervision of the superpowers, especially Great Britain at that time and France.
Sure.
So the other Islamic countries, we see Iran after the First World War,
mm-hmm.
As Iran announced to be a neutral country in the war, but the Western countries, the two sides of the war, didn't pay attention to this announcement of Iran, and they both, they occupied Iran. And Iran after the war was a very weak country.
True.
The other Islamic countries in that time, we see Egypt also had the same situation like Iran.
So if I'm not mistaken, what you're trying to say is that during that time, it's not only a matter of the Ottoman Empire going down. It's also a matter of all of these Islamic countries being weakened due to, for example, the World War, the First World War, and the other circumstances that were going on, generally speaking, these Muslim countries were all weakened by that situation.
Exactly. As many thinkers, as I heard one of the quotes of the Supreme Leader of Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah yes. Khamenei, said, the First World War and the defeat of Ottoman Empire was a great strike on the back of Islamic world, mm-hmm. so that after that, you know, Islamic world couldn't stand up again.
Yeah.
And we see, for example, after the First World War, even something, we have some very sad happening during the war.
True.
We see the government of Hejaz, today we call we know it as Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
The king of Hejaz was, which was under the supervision of Ottoman Empire, was the king Sharif Hussein.
Yeah.
So Sharif Hussein was promised by the Great Britain, if the Kingdom of Hejaz supported Britain in the war, after the defeat of Ottoman Empire, they said to Sharif Hussein that they recognized him as the Caliph of the Islamic world.
True.
Why? Because they say you have the Kingdom of Hejaz, and also you have Mecca and Medina,
the
heart and the Ummul Qura of the Islamic world.
Yeah.
So you are deserved to be the Caliph of the Muslims. Mm-hmm. So this simple man believed the promise of the Great Britain.
True.
Unfortunately, you know, it is not the case of being Shia or Sunni like that.
Yeah.
Even Sharif Hussein in the First World War was the enemy of the Ottoman Empire and supported and helped the Great Britain.
Yeah.
But so the question here is that what happened to Sharif Hussein after the war?
Yeah.
He became the Caliph of the Muslims.
Obviously.
That's the lesson of the history to us that yeah. taught us. Not only he didn't become the king or Caliph of the Muslim world after the defeat. Unfortunately, he helped. We can say if maybe he helped Ottoman Empire, maybe Ottoman Empire could be saved from the defeat after the war. But unfortunately, an Islamic state supported a Western country against another Islamic state.
Yeah,
that was the situation in Islamic world.
True.
So, as we say in many languages, like Persian language, that there are some people that never they fulfill their promises.
Yeah.
Like the Great Britain, when we study the history of the Great Britain, sure. especially as a colonial country, they yes. never fulfilled their promise to other people and countries. And that was the reason we see not only Sharif Hussein didn't become the Caliph of the Muslims, but also he was exiled to Cyprus.
True.
And it is written in many books that he died in Cyprus because of the very severe sadness and the situation, mm-hmm. the psychological situation he had.
Because of not having the British and fulfilling their promise in regards to placing him as the Caliph.
And also Muslims. What happened to his family? His family were exiled to a small and new country. Today we know it as Jordan.
True.
And today King Abdullah of Jordan, not the King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
Sharif Hussein was forefather of this King Abdullah.
Mm-hmm.
And they say they are from the Prophet family, Al-Hashimi.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they wish one day they come back to their father land, but
True.
They cannot do that
yeah.
now. And so what is the result for this kingdom? And
yeah.
Finally, not only they couldn't have the power,
yeah.
and unfortunately they lost their power, mm-hmm. and the Great Britain made the situation ready for a new state and government in that
yes.
area of Hejaz, as we call it today, Saudi Arabia.
Thank you very much. So we're going to carry on with the discussion in just a couple minutes. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and then we have a couple more questions that we really need to get down to find answers to. These are your questions, by the way. And we'll carry on with the discussion from there. Please stay with us.
The message of Imam Hussein was freedom, peace, patience and dialogue. Until the last moment, he kept his dialogue with exemplary patience, fighting for freedom and peace. Throughout history, no revolution stood the test of time, the name of God missing behind the universality and humanity of the messages. As the saying goes, a revolution without revelation is oppressive, and a revelation without revolution is oppressed. Islamic Revolution of Iran, a revolution that kept the world's politicians sleepless, wondering what had suddenly stirred an entire country, previously kept hostage in a cultural invasion. A country so empowered to fight for their faith, sacrificing its sons and brothers and fathers. Khomeini, their spiritual leader, gave them courage to fight for their rights and freedom to choose the destiny of their own country. With this motivation came new hope, founded by the same principles of Imam Hussein. For every people, every time, in every country. In the fight for freedom, the hope was dying, was rekindled. And in the expression of that original faith, their voices echoed loud to every oppressed people around the world. As Khomeini put it, it is not important to stage a revolution, but to remain revolutionary. When we look around the world, we see those same freedoms being fought for, with the stamp of the revolution remaining a light of hope, as the revolution lives on in the hearts of every oppressed people. In order to be kept alive, a revolution requires that its people remain revolutionary and progressive, upholding those very fundamental principles and echoing that message across borders and social classes, with the banner of Islam flying high in their lives and Islam penetrating deep in their hearts.
Thank you very much, dear viewers. Thank you for being with us. We are going to continue with our discussion. The discussion that we've been having up until now was about the effect and the impact that the Islamic Revolution has had on, in today's world and today's whether it's politics, Dr. Shujaipur, that we're talking about, or social changes that this revolution brought about. We're going to carry on with the discussion, but we're going to move on from the First World War, and because you gave us a very clear picture of what the region in general was dealing with, the Middle East, or the eastern side of the world, as they say, how they were dealing with things, and the Ottoman Empire falling and stuff like that. If we're going to move on now to get closer to the time of the revolution, and to get a better picture of exactly what was going on during those years.
Yes, as I had a lot of meeting with, as I told you, with especially Western professors and researchers in Iran, and when we talk about the situation of Islamic world in the 20th century, they were surprised that, that was very surprised for me that they didn't know about the exact happening before the First World War, Second World War,
sure.
About in Islamic world. Maybe they know about the European history or the history of the war in Europe, but they don't know about the situation of Islamic world. The point is that, as I mentioned, after the First World War, Islamic world became so much weak and was a kind of, nearly 100% under the control of the superpowers of that time. And unfortunately, after the Second World War, the situation became worse.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we see the establishment and formation of the Zionist regime, Israel, in 1948, after the Second World War, it made the situation better for the Western countries. As Imam Khomeini said, they cultivated a cancer cell in the heart of the Islamic world.
True.
And that is what happened after the Second World War.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, we see some resistance by the Arab countries after the war for freeing the Palestine, occupied Palestine. But unfortunately, none of those attempts were not successful.
True.
Just we see, for example, the war of 1967, the Arab armies with Israel, that They were defeated by Israel in 6 days.
Yeah.
It is called, you know, the Six-Day War in 1967. As I say in my presentation in university, the six-hour war, not six-day war.
True.
Really, because in the first hours of the war,
the army
of Israel could defeat all Arab armies, you know.
True.
And if just we compare, just to say that one of the good examples that really. Maybe for the Muslim is very easy example, but for the Western researcher it's something very important, and they are working on it. That
yeah.
What is the reason behind the victory of Hezbollah in 2006 over Israel?
Yes.
And what happened in 1967 that all Arab armies couldn't defeat Israel?
True. This change that we see in the
answer is there, you know, the impact of Islamic revolution.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yes.
We're going to continue with that discussion and how the Islamic revolution, the significance of the Islamic revolution, given the circumstances after the Second World War, as you said. Dear viewers, we're going to go to my friend, my dear friend, Brother Abbas Monfarid. He's going to give you a report that he has ready for you. And
thank
then
you
we'll
very much, Mahdi. Dear viewers, thanks for staying with us until now. Here I was browsing websites, and one of the websites we have basic concepts and tenets of the Islamic Revolution. Of course, Islamic Revolution pursued the following ideals: establishment of the rule of Islam and safeguarding unity in the world of Islam, fighting against enemies of Islam, colonialists and exploiters of Muslim nations, fighting against oppression and suppression, hegemony of superpowers and colonialism all over the world, and supporting Islamic humanistic and freedom movements in the world. And the last one is establishing peace in the world after overthrowing the hegemony of superpowers, colonialism and world oppression. Doctor, let me ask you this question, Dr. Shajai. Don't you think that Islamic revolution of Iran paved the way for Islamic movements of other countries, and it was really the start of Islamic movements in the world?
That's an important point, but we cannot say just the role, this role was done by Islamic revolution from the beginning. You know, we see many Islamic thinkers in the 19th and 20th century, like Sir Jamaluddin Asadabadi. As I can say, he tried to do what Imam Khomeini wanted to do, but he couldn't. But the really turning point of the Islamic awakening, as you said, we can say, you know, what Imam Khomeini could fulfill was that the former great thinkers of Islamic world, that they wanted to do, but they couldn't do that. And Imam Khomeini, it shows that the importance of what Imam Khomeini did. It was, yes, we can say it could be fulfilled the dream of the Muslims.
Can we say it bestowed great confidence on Muslim nations?
Exactly it is. Because when I myself have some talks with even Western professors, even in Iran and abroad, they say two important things about the Islamic revolution. They say one of the most important lessons that the superpowers, they don't like it. Islamic revolution gave the lesson of independence and self-confidence to other countries,
right.
True.
Especially Muslims in the world.
Yeah.
And the second point that was really surprising for me when I heard one of the Hungarian professors who was in Qom said,
yeah.
You don't know, but we know, you know, better than you even sometimes, that Islamic revolution tried to revive the role of the religion in today's world.
Yeah.
Something that the superpowers after the Renaissance, they don't like the Western societies to come back to the religious societies.
Yeah.
They don't like religion to play an important role in the society. This too important, and the key point of the Islamic revolution could play, I mean, giving the feeling and this self-confidence and independence to the Muslims that we can. This is the Western say most of the time in their election campaigns that we can.
Yeah.
This is the time that the Muslims say we can do ourselves.
Yeah.
Not just to be all the time dependent to other superpowers.
So we can say Islamic government of Iran was a role model for all other countries in the world to fight against hegemony of superpowers, colonialism Is it right to say like this?
Exactly. You know, after the Islamic Revolution, especially when Iran was a country nearly 100% dependent to the United States, they were somehow worried that after the victory of Islamic Revolution, Iran goes to the Eastern Bloc, the Communist Bloc.
Sure.
Not to be an independent, you know. Yeah. They didn't at all thinking about that Iran to say not
like
no East, no West, Islam is the best.
Yeah.
We want to have Islamic country.
Yeah.
And the only, you know, if you study the comments and the analysis of the American and the Western, I mean the Western Europe researchers and academic figures, they were worried about that Iran goes to the club of the former Soviet Union.
Yeah.
And when Imam Khomeini said no East, no West, they thought at the beginning that it was Imam Khomeini was joking. It is not, because
it's not possible.
That time it was not even imaginable to think that to be independent.
Yeah.
Even today,
I
have been to many Islamic countries.
Yeah.
Even today, in some Islamic, so-called Islamic countries, when you see nearly all of the important affairs of the country. Are governed by the superpowers.
Yeah.
The security system and many the technology and knowledge and everything is managed by the superpowers.
Let me ask this question. I mean, obviously, this is the question I'm going to ask is somewhat to give an answer to it will itself require a lengthy discussion. But if you could give me a brief answer to this question, what makes Iran, or especially at the time of the revolution. You know how what you mentioned that Iran neither went towards the West neither nor towards the East. What makes Iran have its own identity? What is it that gives Iran that is it, you know, its own identity that separates it from the East and the West?
That's very important point. If you look at the Iranian history and even the Islamic world history, for over especially after the Safavid time. Two or three centuries, the Iranian people, became so much tired of the undeserved rulers because they had this habit to rely on the Britain or Russia in that. And, at all they couldn't have any good feedback of this independence to those powers.
True.
And, it is interesting. Point when we look at in 1814, I can say nearly 200 years ago, based on the map that Thompson Institute published, Iran in that time was 5.1 million square kilometers. Mm-hmm. Today Iran is 1.6.
True.
It means in less than 200 years before Islamic Revolution, Iran lost 3.5 million square kilometers based on the documents that we have in the Western countries.
Yes.
So it means how have been the rulers of the country.
Yeah.
So the people were tired and they accepted to tolerate all the sufferings of independence, but to be independent.
True.
And that is, what Imam Khomeini did. And the people accepted this motto and this ideology with open arms, and so
True.
The people resisted.
Thank you very much. So, I mean, what I understood from what you mentioned was that what separates Iran from the West and the East, and this whole concept of us not, or the Islamic Revolution not being part of the East nor the West, is this independence that the people of Iran have. Thank you very much, Dr. Shajaipur. Yeah. I believe we have Dr. Bahmanpour, Hujjat al-Islam, Dr. Bahmanpour with us via phone. If you can hear my voice, I would like to say salam to our dear doctor, an Islamic expert. I believe he's joining us from London. Salam alaikum, doctor.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah, and my salam to the esteemed guests and all the viewers of this very interesting program.
Yes. Thank you very much. We're going to have my dear friend Abbas. He has a couple of questions that he's going to ask, and then we will benefit from your answers to the questions.
Dr. Bahmanpour, thanks for joining us in this program. It's a great honor for you to have you in this program. Of course, as you're watching and listening, today we're talking about the impact of Iran's revolution in the contemporary history of the Islamic world. Let me ask you my question in this way. Don't you think Iran's Islamic Revolution changed all global equations and arrangements by the superpowers, and it was a new movement in the Islamic world?
Well, I think the answer to this question is quite clear. I mean, if we look back in the course of time during the past 30 years, we see the shift of many different equations of power, not only in the Middle East, but worldwide. However, I think there is one more important aspect of the impact of Islamic Revolution, which is somehow unknown to people. And it's not political, although it gives support to political change. However, it's a shift in values and perspective of people globally. Now, if you look 30 years ago, or 35 years ago back, we would see that faith was something which was seen by everyone as a taboo, that they shouldn't have talked about it. Even if they had faith, they had to conceal it. And the values which were propped up by the faith and faithful people, they were somehow seen as mean values, things which should be discarded very easily, and it would be discarded quickly by the modern world. However, now there is this shift in values.
Yes.
People are now looking up to religious people, and they are now talking about religious states, which was quite impossible 35 years ago to talk about it, seeing that this is it. The religious states have actually consumed their time. They belong to the past. Now people are coming to a different worldview, different understanding. 35 years ago, religion was seen as the opium of the masses. Now we see that the Marxist ideology is either completely gone or it has modified itself to incorporate what Islamic revolution brought about to this world. In the West, we see that not only Muslims are coming back exploring their Islamic tradition and Islamic heritage. Even now the Christians are coming to explore their faith and their Christian tradition. The Islamic revolution has given a new life even to the church.
Dr. Bahmanfur, let me ask my question from another point of view. Don't you think that the Islamic government of Iran was a role model even for all countries around the world, not just Muslim countries, to fight against hegemony of superpowers, colonialism, and global oppression?
Yes, of course. Islamic revolution is suffering all these sanctions and resistance because they don't want it to gain that role of being the ideal and role model of everyone else in the world. I think even non-Muslims are now thinking that it is possible to break the hegemony of the West. As I said, all these pressures that Iran is experiencing at the moment is to not allow this to happen, but I think it's just futile resistance towards this, and the change has already come and the values have already shifted.
Thank you very much. Let me keep you online. Again, we'll be with you with more questions during the program. Mahdi?
Yes, thank you very much, Brother Abbas. There's one question in particular that I would want to ask myself, and that was, if you could just briefly, Dr. Bahmanpour, mention the impacts, okay? If you could just simply number them for us. I guess one of the most important was that self-confidence that came with the happening of the Islamic Revolution. If you could please elaborate on the self-confidence that, as my friend mentioned, both Islamic countries and, you know, even when we're talking about other nations, got from the strength that they got from the Islamic Revolution. What role do you think the Islamic Revolution played in that self-confidence?
The first thing I wanted to say about the impact of the revolution was that self-confidence of Muslims.
Yeah.
We saw that Muslims had absolutely lost their self-confidence during past couple of centuries or even more. After that waxing of Islamic civilization in early 20 centuries, we had this waning of Islamic civilization and lack of self-confidence, which had actually deteriorating effect even on the natural course of improvement and progress of Muslim countries. Now we see that everyone is looking at Iran, watching what's happening there, the people of Iran, the scientists, the people of knowledge, they are actually working to make this gap, which has been created during past centuries between the Muslim world and the Western world in terms of science and technology, they are actually just taking a very huge leap to fill this gap. And this, of course, I have been talking to many Muslims here when Iran actually launched its first satellite, local satellite made locally and nationally, they were actually amazed and they had gained such a self-confidence that if we want, we can do it. So that gloom and disappointment which was prevailing in the Muslim world is now gone. And this is a new era, which of course, as I said, there is great resistance from the other side not to allow this happen, but this has already started and no one can stop it, I think.
Yes. We're going to take a quick break, inshallah. When we come back, inshallah, we'll continue with our discussion. A couple more questions. These are, as I mentioned earlier, the questions of our dear viewers. And then we'll try to get answers to the questions that you've been asking after the break, inshallah. Please stay with us.
Viewers, thanks for staying with us. Here we have again Dr. Bahmanpour from London. Dr. Bahmanpour, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm hearing you.
Let me ask you this question. Of course, Islamic Revolution of Iran presented the idea of unity between the Shiite and Sunnis and reminded all Muslims of the trig, which is on behalf of all enemies of Islam who try to use the discord between the Muslims and plunder their national resources. How should Muslim countries help Iran in this way?
A few days ago, we had a conference here, the Unity for the Unity Week, and I actually mentioned one thing which everyone, Sunni and Shia brothers, they did agree, that Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, set an example for us in a very clever way. I mentioned that there was always this divide between Shia and Sunni about the birthday of the Prophet, the exact birthday of the Prophet, whether it's 12th of Rabiul Awwal or 17th of Rabiul Awwal. And those Muslims who celebrated this event had always, in countries where they were living side by side, like in Pakistan, in subcontinent, in Africa, they had always this problem of difference and disunity on this issue. Now, Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi alayhi, very cleverly used this point of difference to make it a point of unity by announcing 12th to 17th of Rabiul Awwal, the Unity Week. It was ingenious. It was very clever, I think, of Imam Khomeini to do that. And what we have to learn, both Sunni and Shi'i together, is that it is not impossible to make the points that we differ with each other historically, socially and theologically, to make them point of unity. It all depends on intention and on goodwill. And I think Iranian nation and Iranian leadership has shown that goodwill to the world, and certainly we will receive positive answers from our Sunni brothers as well.
Okay, how can Muslim countries help us in this matter to force closer ties with each other?
Closer ties between Shias and Sunnis, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is that the ulama of both sides have to educate their people about the benefits of the unity, and other Muslim countries can help us by actually allowing this to happen and a good education right from the beginning, from the childhood. The Muslims, Sunni and Shia, should have this idea of unity as one of the highest values in their life, as it is mentioned as one of the highest values in the Quran.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bahmanpour Mahdi.
Thank you very much. So I guess as the final question that we have, because we only have about 2 minutes left in the program, this is just a very quick question that I wanted to ask. The Islamic Revolution, how is it different from the other revolutions that really got people involved more than simply getting political figures involved? If you could just please elaborate that on.
As I mentioned, Islamic Revolution of Iran was concentrated on the role of the religion in the society.
Yeah.
As the Iran, as a religious society in the East, for long centuries. So in that revolution, religion played an important role.
Yeah.
And one of the goals of religion, of Islamic Revolution, was revival of the religion in the society.
Yeah.
And it showed Islamic Revolution again proved to the world, unlike what we see in the Western countries after the Renaissance, that they don't like, or somehow we can say they are against, or they hate that religion to come back to the society. Islamic Revolution proved that religion, I mean in this case Islam, is an up-to-date religion that can play its role in all the times, as if we want.
Yeah.
And this is what they don't like, that Islamic Revolution is going to really revive the role of religion. And the key point that they don't like is if religion, even they don't like in the Western country, they don't like even the Christianity to come to have a kind of power in the society.
Thank you very
much. This is the key point, inshallah.
Yes. Thank you very much. So I believe the key point, the bullet point of our discussion, is how religion actually plays a role when it comes to this revolution that's taking place or took place. Thank you very much. I would like to thank Dr. Bahmanpour, who was with us. I would also like to apologize from him because of the connections, the problem we had with the connection earlier. I would like to apologize from him for that. I would also like to thank Dr. Shujaipur, who was with us in the program and helped us with carrying out this discussion. I believe next week, inshallah, we will continue with this discussion and focus more on the results and the effects that the Islamic Revolution had. Finally, I would like to thank my friend, Brother Abbas Munfarid, who was with us. And more than anyone else, our dear viewers who stayed with us throughout the program and were patient enough to stay within the discussion. Thank you very much. Please make sure to tune in for the next issue, for the next episode of Open Talk. And until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.